Roxanne Shante, and of course, you know I am listening to CKUT 90.3.
The rhymes you're about to hear me recite are dedicated to all of those that bite.
There is this thing. Do you realize
what is there?
Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news brought to you live.
Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Off the Hour, right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. We are 5 days into the month of May. We are broadcasting from unceded Mohawk and Anishinaabe territory. You are tuned into The Avalanche, a special presentation of CKUT's Community News Department. The Avalanche seeks to cover issues affecting those with disabilities. I'm your host, Zoe. On today's show, episode 8 from the Disabilities Art Podcast, titled The Arts Are My Family. All that right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. You are listening to The Avalanche, where all abilities are welcome. If you'd like to get involved, you can call 514-448-4041, extension 6788, or email news at ckut.ca. You can also email us at ckut.ca or follow us on Twitter at @avalancheckut.
Level in your region or a neighboring region is red. To curb the spread of COVID-19, gatherings with family and friends in private homes and yards are prohibited. Travel between regions should be avoided, and traveling to yellow zones is forbidden. It's forbidden to leave your home between 9:30 p.m. and 5 a.m. Visit quebec.ca/coronavirus to learn more about the other measures in place. Follow all the rules, all the time, no exceptions. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Welcome back to The Avalanche on CKUT 90.3 FM. On today's show, an episode of Disabilities Art Podcast, titled The Arts Are My Family, featuring an interview with April Hubbard. That's up now.
Welcome to the Disabilities Art Podcast, a podcast about art and disability here in Chibooktik, Halifax, Nova Scotia. I'm your host, Kelsey McDonald, and I'm joined today by my co-hosts, Emma Mader and Truly Love. Today's podcast is going to be an interview with April Hubbard. April, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
No problem. April Hubbard began her career as an actor before developing her skills as a director, producer, board member, accessibility advisor, and arts administrator after entering the world of disability and finding there was no longer a space for her on stage. As the chair of the Halifax Fringe Festival, she provides a platform for others excluded from mainstream performance. In 2019, April became a professional trapeze artist, an acrobat, when she began performing with Legacy Circus. She co-founded Disability X Halifax, a storytelling event created and led by people with disabilities, and is currently working with Drifting Amber Collective to remove barriers to access in the arts and to support people with unseen bodies and unheard voices to claim barriers. Oh, no, unheard voices to claim creative control. April was recently hired by Eastern Front Theater to draft a report on the barriers to inclusion that exist in the performing arts in Nova Scotia and to provide recommendations to remove them. She is an outspoken advocate whose focus to empower people with disabilities to discover their voice and to be leaders in designing society in which they wish to live. April proudly shows her body without hiding its differences, which serves both challenge assumptions and to normalize the presence of people with disabilities in our everyday world. We'll just keep going with that because I think April's going to do a great job of informing us who she is and what she does as well, much better than I did. So that was April's bio that she gave us, but April is, as you can tell, that was a long bio because April does a lot of things. So we're really excited to have April join us. April works with BAFF in a multiple different types of capacities as an artist, as a presenter, as an ambassador for 2019. So I've worked with April many times, very happy to see her here on the podcast and interview her. She was definitely one of my top picks as a guest. So I'm glad that it's happening. How you doing, April? What's going on?
I'm doing well. Yeah, it's wonderful to join you all and get to see you. It feels like we don't get to see enough of each other during the pandemic. So it's nice to be able to gather today and meet some new faces that I've seen on screen and on social media. But yeah.
April's one of our fans, you guys. April actually listens to the podcast.
Oh, that's so cool. I'm really excited that I finally get to meet you. It's exciting.
Yes, I'm sure Emma and Truly are used to me talking about you a lot. So it's exciting that they have the opportunity to meet you and ask questions themselves. So April, I think what a good place to start off is sort of tell us a little bit about you as an artist and sort of how you became the artist that you are today.
Yeah, so my evolution to becoming an artist was kind of a strange one. I was never really meant to be in the arts, I don't think, but once I discovered it, I didn't really have another choice. I connected wholeheartedly, my entire soul did, with the arts and had to find a way to be involved. I started acting in a really strange way. When I was a preteen, my mother was working in an accounting firm, and the person owning the firm just happened to be involved in community theater in Yarmouth, Nova Scotia, where I grew up. And one day their script prompter dropped out very last minute for a show. And she turned to my mom and said, "You have daughters, don't you? One of them must be available." And so I got called up just for the one night to be a script prompter and fell in love as soon as I was in the theater, and ended up being an assistant stage manager for that show and then auditioning for other shows. And by the time I graduated high school, I co-owned a theater company in Yarmouth, Nova Scotia. And it moved up to Halifax here with me when I came to Dal to study theater. And it just kept going from there, that I kept having to find new ways to be involved and new paths on my artistic journey. I always technically had a disability. I was born with spina bifida, and I had a strawberry birthmark and a few other issues that came up every once in a while but didn't really affect my day-to-day living. But when I was 16, I was walking down a flight of stairs at school one day and heard a snap, and my foot started to swell instantly. I couldn't wait there within the hour, and it just kept getting worse. Went to see the doctors. They told me it was a sprained ankle, which even at 16, I was like, it's not even in my ankle, so I don't know how that could happen. It took many years to get diagnosed. They found tumors in my spine eventually. And even at that point, they couldn't really tell me what that progression would look like. This particular type of tumor normally exists at birth. Mine were probably there and just got missed. But if they're not removed very early in life, they cause a lot of problems later on. So I'm technically, as far as we know, the oldest known case in Canada that has this particular diagnosis. So they're kind of looking to what happens to me to be able to know what's going to happen down the road for other folks.
Oh my God. So,
yeah. And then once I started to move into the arts in the disability world, when I was in university, I started to see a lot more opposition to me being on stage when my mobility wasn't as great. There were days I could still move around and nobody would even notice. And then other days I walked with a limp. Some days I even needed forearm crutches in rehearsals. And eventually I was asked to leave the acting program at DAL because they felt that it would be distracting to audiences to have me on stage. Luckily, the program, from what I've heard, has changed drastically since then. It's a very different approach now. But at the time in 2005, that would have been, there wasn't a space for me there. I spent the next few years really struggling to figure out how I could possibly fit into the arts and just not finding an option at all. And then I kind of remembered a lot of the older skills I had from running a theater company in my younger years and decided that I can still be involved in that way and still have that connection to the arts world and be able to make space for other people's art, even if I couldn't make my own. So moved into more of the production direction and creating theater spaces in any way I could. And that's how I started with Fringe. I started selling tickets and welcoming people at the doors and cleaning bathrooms and anything that needed to be done just so I could be around that space and around that energy and just connect with my family again, because the arts are my family. That's where I find my connection. So that was kind of how I found my way in. And over the years, it's just been one evolution after the next that I meet one person at one event, and they say, oh, have you heard about such and such? Or would you ever be interested in trying this instead? And I've just found this big world that has a place for me now that I never thought would be possible.
Yeah, it's your story is so inspiring, because I think time after time, there's all these barriers into being included. And I think something that I always find really admirable about you is that you always say yes to things. And then we figure out a way to make it work. And it's not, Tova has a saying, you know, inclusion isn't difficult, it's different. And I think that, you know, the challenges that you've faced in terms of accessibility in the theater community, you know, it's always been about, you know, finding where it works and then sharing that information with other people, which is, I think, another thing that you're really great at, is advocating for these spaces to be more inclusive and to push people's limited knowledge on what people with disability are able to do. So, you know, I have so much respect for you and what you've been able to do. And you're such an amazing performer. Like, even when we watch you perform, there's something really fascinating in the work that you do, especially in circus. We were watching some of your footage, and I love that you also, within your routines, incorporate described audio for visually impaired audience members to still participate in your performance. And you ask the audience at the very beginning to look at your body and really examine it and watch what it's capable of. And that in itself, I think, is really pushing the needle forward, because I think a lot of the times, you know, the reason that you were asked not to be in the theater department is because it was distracting, that it would take away from the art if people saw you performing. And I think the way that you do your trapeze work is pushing that idea and really challenging it to say, no, I think that my art is better, more interesting to look at because of what my body is capable of doing and how you're pushing your body to do things that are really incredible. So
thank you. I mean, I've been very lucky in my circus career that I was able to, literally the first time I touched a circus apparatus was surrounded by this amazing group of folks from Legacy Circus, Aaron Ball and Vanessa Furlong. And they took me under their wing that day and asked me if I wanted to be involved further, and really saw the potential before I ever thought that it could happen and before I believed in myself. And they've also worked with me to be partners in kind of discovering these new ways that we can bring everybody in and have a space in our story and really collaborate with us in telling the story. It's not just us on stage. It's the audience is another member of the performance, and it's very interactive. As you mentioned, it's actually what we do in the Legacy Circus shows is enhanced narration for blind and partially sighted audiences. So it's different than described audio that you'd see, for example, if you're watching a television program, or here, if you're watching a television program. It doesn't follow all the same rules and gives us a little bit more freedom to just describe the feeling or the movement. And we do it very much in a calming, almost ASMR voice.
It's so very relaxing.
Yeah, it becomes another character in the story. And a lot of folks who are completely sighted would come to me after the show and say, it made it so much safer for me to be able to follow along with you on this journey through the story of that particular legacy piece, The World at Our Feet, is a very challenging story. It tells Aaron Ball's real life story of being lost in the woods for 6 days and going through a lot of trauma and losing her lower limbs as a result. But people can feel safe following along on that story because there's this same calm tone that you can follow throughout and everybody can follow it. It becomes another element that adds so much more to the piece. And that's what we really want to do with these changes. It's not something that's added on after the fact so that other people can be involved. It's something that's planned from the very beginning so that every aspect of the story is respected in that, and that we're layering something else throughout and not just putting something on the end. And we did a lot of other access inclusions for that particular piece. One that I hadn't done before was we did Touch Tour the week before at the Halifax Library. So we set up the entire rig and had the apparatuses hanging. We had all of us as performers there to speak to individuals so they could get used to our voices and know which character was which. They could touch the costumes, so really feel what everything felt like. So if they could not see it on stage, they already knew what that felt like and had already interacted with it. We had an art piece that Kristen Harrington had made for us that was tactile as well, that represented Aaron's journey in the woods for those 6 days. So there were a lot of different ways that people could be involved and actually even try some of the apparatuses if they wanted to. So it was a really interesting way of looking beyond the standard. You go into a theater and you sit down and don't move and be quiet and listen to what we tell you. It's, a much more collaborative and interesting process in my mind.
And I think that the Touch Tour is such an interesting concept because I think that there's so much that goes into the performance, more than I think even an audience member is able to absorb in the time of the performance. So it's like really cool, just from a behind the scenes perspective, to be able to like go in, ask questions, familiarize yourself, touch things. I love touching stuff. Mm-hmm. So I would love to go in and also just to be able to, you know, circus is something that, you know, you don't see circus everywhere. We do have a few circus companies here in Halifax that people can go to, but it's not the most accessible art form. It's not something that everyone can try. And so being able to just see the equipment, touch the equipment and go, is this something I might be curious about? How do I learn more about this stuff? How do I get more involved in this craft? And I think that's really cool. Like an added bonus of that accessibility measure is like, there's more to it. And I think that's always the case. I find like when accessibility is thought of, like you mentioned, not as something's tacked on at the end, but at the core of the creation of the piece, you start to see all these additional benefits that come from that incorporation at the origin of creation is really key. And so I think that's so cool.
Yeah. And I mean, I've been so lucky with Legacy Circus too, that it is all performers. When we're together, Erin, Vanessa, and I, it's three women with disabilities on stage, and we're very open about that. So every aspect of the show, whether we're talking about disability in the moment or not, is going to be about disability, because it's such an important part of our lives that that's going to come into it. And it just becomes an additional element of the story. And I think it really enriches the story and tells a more truthful and deep story than it would if it was, oh, okay, well, let's have this one disabled character in the show, which we need more of that as well. But it's different when it's a group of disabled people coming together and telling a story, because we can support each other so much more, and it becomes so much deeper and more honest.
And I think there's a lot of crossover too with folks with disabilities. I think, like you said, it's easier to make a safer space when everyone's goal is that. And I think sometimes, you know, when there is just one person with a disability in a room full of able-bodied people, there's a lot of discomfort in that room. And I think that it's really challenging to overcome that when you're the only person there. But when you're surrounded by people with disability, and you know that you have people who will support you to help with additional challenges too, because like you were saying, like in theater, you know, if your mobility changes from day to day, you know, having a team that recognizes and supports you in that and says, okay, maybe today's not the day we put April 50 feet up in the sky, upside down. Maybe today is the day we work on something a little bit more manageable, and have, you know, that feeling that everyone here is okay with that, that there's no one going, ah, April, darn. I think that that's also part of the creating a safe space for artists with disabilities is about being able to be more, I don't know what that word is, going with the flow, or more fluid in the way that you rehearse, practice, and participate is all.
And I think it becomes more normal and accepted, because it is everybody's normal and every day in that room. So it's not shocking or different. It's just, this is the way it is. We're not looking through it at it through a normative lens, so everybody just understands and there doesn't have to be any explanation. And going back to what you said about being the only person with a disability in the room, I think that's the case. I've been talking a lot with a lot of folks from various underrepresented communities lately with my work on the Eastern Front Accessibility Project, and it's been really interesting to hear people's perspectives on so many different communities of being that token person in the room, that you're the only voice and you have to tell everybody's experience and fight for everyone. So yeah, it's interesting to hear how much similarities there is from one group to the next, and what that can do, not only when we come together as folks with disabilities, but when we can join BIPOC individuals and 2SLP LGBTQI communities in helping share their voices and amplify their voices as well. I think society teaches us to, nope, stay in your own groups and fight for your cause. And if you speak up, you're just going to be taking away from somebody else. But it's really not the case. We all have very similar experiences. And if we can help amplify the voices of others, it's only going to help everybody. And there's also just so much intersectionality in those communities. I mean, when I look at my disability community, unfortunately in Halifax, we're still very white, because we haven't found that way of being a safe space for disabled people of other races. But there is so much crossover in specifically the queer community, that it's really good to see that in some ways we've made improvements, and in some ways we still have so much further to go, but when we can support each other, it makes such a difference, and you're helping so many people that you may not even know you're helping yet.
I remember talking to Kelsey about the intersection of disability and just in the queer community, and kind of joking, saying that I had a friend who I wanted to interview for this podcast, and Kelsey was like, well, does she identify as having a disability? And I was like, well, they're queer, so I'm assuming, and kind of make a joke about it. And Kelsey's like, yeah, I mean, it's not like society has been beating you guys down for your entire lives and causing major mental illness or anything.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, yeah. there's so much crossovers in
the and it must be the same for like BIPOC, like people of color especially. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, like I said, we still haven't been able to, we haven't been able to do the work. It's on us. We haven't done the work yet as the people with disabilities that have the power, because the ones that have been allowed to speak up and be in the room are white folks so far, and white folks that still look very normative. I mean, I recognize as a woman who uses a manual chair, but my body, if I'm sitting behind a desk, you can't tell that I'm in a wheelchair. I can still be very passing. So it's the people that are allowed in so far that are allowed to have voices and speak in these forums. So we really have to do the work to talk about the other issues as well and talk about the intersectionalities so that everybody else can come along on this journey too, because there's so many more people that society's not even thinking of yet and that we haven't done the work to connect with yet.
And sometimes there's this fear where you have not had your voice heard. So when you are the first, like maybe white or passing, you have a fear there's not enough room for anyone else, or like that will take away from your voice, but it won't. I mean, you just need to build a bigger table or whatever they say.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I think it's a very human reaction to have that moment of, well, I have so little, how can I give some up? I won't have all my needs met. And that's what society teaches us for sure. And I mean, there's already, as any underrepresented community, there's so much work we have to do just to survive every day and just to get out of bed and just to have our basic needs met. I think a lot of people look at me as a wheelchair user and assume, oh, well, you need a new wheelchair, you can just apply and get one. But no, almost everybody I know in Halifax has had to GoFundMe or beg money from their parents as adults or do some things that you may not want to do to make that money. Yeah. Just to be able to move around society and be a contributing member. So there's a lot of work that any underrepresented individual is already doing. And to think that, oh, now I have to do more. But if we can make a little bit of time to make space for other people to come behind us, then we're going to have so many more people supporting us in that. And it's only going to make the journey easier.
Exactly. Totally.
Great. Yeah. And they're also going to have some really cool ideas of how we can make the space more inclusive and more accessible that I may not have thought of yet, because yeah. I only have a very narrow understanding of the world of disability that's understood through my own personal experience.
Mm-hmm. And I know, like, there's a lot of talk, like what you were saying earlier about pressure of having, maybe you didn't use the word pressure, but I know in the comedy community, when you're the only woman on a lineup, there's a lot of pressure. You have to be funny because you're representing women on that lineup. But then there's also just internalized misogyny makes you not want to allow more women into the space. It makes you scared to let more women in the space because you think there's not enough room for everybody. But it's like there's this disconnect where you don't realize that allowing more women, that is from the patriarchy, that you have that idea, and that allowing more women will take that pressure off, that you feel like it's only beneficial.
Yeah.
But it is hard to wrap your mind around that when you're so conditioned.
Exactly. It's very true. I mean, you have to throw out the rule book and really everything you've been taught, you have to start from square one and try something new and take a really scary leap, not knowing where that's going to bring you. And I mean, even in the wheelchair-using community in Halifax, it is predominantly men, because men are more statistically likely to have an injury that puts them in a chair. So in a lot of wheelchair-using spaces, I am one of the only women, and I am always very conscious in those spaces of how I dress and how I present myself, because I can't present in the same way a man would and be accepted. So there's all these different layers that we're always having to think about and perform in a way in our day-to-day lives in order to be accepted, but also make space for the next group to come along and help us in that journey, so we don't have to perform as much.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I've never thought of like the wheelchair community as being a place where you could have like underrepresented people, because like you said, I would have just assumed, because I have no experience with that, that if you needed a wheelchair, you'd get a wheelchair.
Yeah.
But that makes a lot of sense that it isn't like that. It's horrible, but.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely the case. And even as me, who's super involved in the community, there's so many people that I don't get to see just because we haven't done the work to welcome them yet.
Yeah.
It's very rare that I see a Black person in a wheelchair in our community, or an Indigenous person in a wheelchair in our community, out and about at events, because they're, we're not creating a welcoming space for them. Having trans folks that are wheelchair users, there are a lot of them in the Halifax community, but they don't feel welcomed in our spaces. So they don't get to tell their stories and be part of the journey and telling us what is really needed, and having their needs fully represented and being fought for.
And do you know why they don't feel comfortable? Do you have any, or
is it I think there's a lot of different factors. One is just we haven't done the work to be more welcoming to them as the people who are in power right now in that community. But also, I think a part of it too is because it is still a very hyper-masculine culture. Especially if you're a young man in a wheelchair, you're taught by society that you have to overcompensate and act a certain way and act very macho in order to be accepted and prove that you're still a man and everything still works. And so that's not a very welcoming space for somebody, for example, who's non-binary or trans. So yeah, we have a lot more work to do to look around the room and say, who's not here? Because we have come a long way as a disability community, as a wheelchair-using community, but there's still so many people who don't have get to have a say and don't get to have a voice, especially in the arts. I mean, when I was looking for performers that had some experience in the arts in Halifax, I was getting like three names over and over and over again.
Same.
And two of us were white women. So...
that's wild. I still am baffled. I know that it's been a while since you've said this, but I'm just still baffled that that even happened, that you're asked to leave your theater, like the program. Not just baffled at the morality of that, but even the legality that that was even slightly able to happen is just...
yeah, actually at the time it was a really big thing. They actually asked a few of us to leave all at the same time that all had disabilities varying across spectrums. And some people just walked away willingly. Some of us fought it. I fought it for a while. And then the more I thought about it, I realized I don't want to be in this space anyway. Even if I win this fight, I don't want to go back to this space. So I kind of, at that point, walked away willingly. There was one gentleman who fought it for a good 2 years and went through some really horrible traumatic experiences as a result, and it was brought to the court system, and it got really, really ugly. But in the end, yeah, nobody prevailed, and we all walked away.
Were you ever, I know this probably wouldn't mean much or like be worth much, but just because I'm curious, were you ever like given an apology from Dalhousie, or like have they ever spoken about what happened, or?
I wasn't. I was given apologies by a few of the individuals that were involved lower down in the decision-making process at that time. Some professors, for example, spoke to me and apologized for their role in it since. But the institution in and of itself, at the time, I don't think that was really a priority for them at all. Yeah. The arts for one weren't super high up on their radar, but especially something involving disability, they had a very set ideal of who they wanted on their stage and we didn't match it. That's happened in a lot of different ways through not just DAL, but so many different arts organizations across Canada. It's come to light in recent years that there's been so much racialized stigma and just body shaming. And yeah, there's been a lot of that happening that's being talked about now, but only very recently.
Right. So would students in the program now know about this history with DAL, like know that this happened, or no, it's not even?
No, I talked about it a little bit back in 2005 and shortly after when it first happened. And then I stopped talking about it altogether until probably about 2-3 years ago. I brought it up here and there again, just kind of voice that it was an experience that happened to me, not really wanting anything to come of it. But just more of an awareness that there is this history that has happened for a lot of individuals. I as far as I know, even people who were involved when it was happening, a lot of students were not super aware. They just assumed I had left for health reasons and didn't really look any further into it.
That's horrible. I'm so sorry that that was your experience. I can't even imagine what that must have been like.
Yeah, thank you for that. I mean, it was really traumatic at the time. Now looking back, I mean, as traumatic as it was, I'm so much happier that I was challenged to take a different path, because I don't think I would have been happy if I had followed that same narrative and that same script of you get an education in this way and then you look for this kind of a job. It wouldn't have been the right fit for me. And I wouldn't have really been pushed outside my comfort zone to try different things and really challenge myself in different ways and experience a lot of awesome types of arts that I never would have looked into if it wasn't for that.
And it sounds like you're opening so many more doors for other people, like from your experience where you had the doors closed on you, you're able to, yeah, allow more different opportunities for people because of that. It is still something that had to happen for this to happen.
Yeah, it's definitely something that I've prioritized in my work since. For example, as the chair of the Fringe, I accepted that position because I saw Fringe as such an important way for anybody to get their foot in the door and anybody to have their story told. And there's no, or, well, I won't say no, there are still gatekeepers. There's no system where there aren't gatekeepers. But a lot of those barriers are removed, that more people can get on stage and have their story told. And that's so important to have in our society. We need more of that. So I wanted to protect that and make sure that that continued to happen. And my work with DysX, forming a space where we as people with individuals get to decide whose story is told, and recognizing that we are two white, very privileged wheelchair users that are organizing it. So it's still not going to be a perfect system, but we give people the power to tell their own story in whatever way they want and to really have their say in shaping how people see them. Yeah. I want to create those spaces more and more. And then with Drifting Amber, I'm really excited about that. We've just started it. We just wrapped up our first project, which was actually me telling part of my story. We had applications open and we're looking to find a time that it's safe to gather again with the disability community to be able to do more photo shoots and create more stories of individuals across the disability spectrum, really prioritizing people who don't typically have their voices heard and be able to tell us what it's like to be them and really show the variety of experiences and just rich experiences and humans that are in our community. I'm really excited to show that more to the world.
And that hasn't come out yet. That was like the video, it was black and white with the poem that you wrote.
Yeah.
I know it's not out yet, so I don't want to say too much, but
well,
I'm so grateful that I got to watch it. Thank you for sending it.
Yeah, I was excited to be able to give you folks a sneak peek. That is actually set to launch through Eastern Front's digital micro grants sometime in March. It's going to be coming out online. So probably
a little bit over time.
Yeah, by the time that this podcast airs, it will be out and live in the public, and yeah, people can go and find it. Yeah, I was really excited to take a lot of risks and tell my story. I kind of started with the idea of telling it from the point of view of an alien coming to Earth and kind of hiding and assimilating in the population, and then revealing themselves and being like, this is who I am, and are you ready to see who else is out there? Because I'm going to show you what else we can do and who else is out there. And yeah, it's just a short little 2-minute video, but I'm excited to see people's reactions, and I hope it has a real impact and challenges some people's perceptions.
I imagine that it will. It was only 2 minutes, but it was a very powerful 2 minutes. And Emily, they're incredible, like their work. And then like your work is clearly so incredible now that I've watched it. So just seeing that collaboration was beyond cool.
Yeah I was really lucky to be introduced to Emily NVIDIA just last year, actually, around the time the pandemic was starting.
Yes, actually.
Yeah, because they photograph a lot of non-normative bodies and just non-binary folks that aren't normally showcased in our society's media. So a mutual friend of ours, Matt Downey, they had introduced us because they had modeled for Emily before. And they were like, yeah, you should really talk to April. And I think she'd be open to exploring. So we did a few photo shoots together and just had a lot of fun. And at our second photo shoot, I believe, this idea came up of, well, how can we do more of this and how can we open it up to more people? Because being in that room where it was at the time during COVID, all socially distanced, it was just myself, Emily, and Matt. Matt does lighting design, and just being there completely vulnerable in front of a camera, which is not something I'm used to as an individual with a disability, and feeling totally supported to try anything and to really lead where I want to go. And both of them, Matt and Emily, just kept saying, oh, you're so beautiful, and like these encouraging words. That it was the most amazing feeling. That was really, really uplifting, and I wanted more opportunities for other people to experience that. So we came up with this idea and found the grant, and yeah, it's really blossomed since then, and we had so many amazing applicants. We're really excited to be able to select a first phase and see where we can go with it.
I'm so excited that people are going to get to experience Emily's photography, the environment that they create for photography. I've had lots of photos taken by different photographers, and it was always a very miserable experience. So it was just so refreshing to have my photographs taken by them, and they're just, yeah, they just, space that they create, I like can't say enough good words about it. I'm always trying to send people to them, like,
yeah,
go have them take your picture. Like, yeah.
Yeah. It's such an amazing supportive space for sure. And just such a collaborative effort too.
Yeah, like, very collaborative.
I'll try a little movement and they're like, oh yeah, I like that. Can we go with that more? And,
yes.
And it's not, well, do this next. It's, well, how do you feel about trying this? And if it's something I can't physically do, I'll offer another alternative. And we just can work back and forth and find really creative, awesome opportunities. Yeah. And they were so not only accepting of my wheelchair, because I consider it a part of my body, but also just so celebratory of it.
Yeah.
And at one point I had gone off to change, and I came back and noticed they were taking photos of my wheelchair alone on stage in the spotlight. And like, yeah, just wanting to showcase in my mind all parts of me. And it was, yeah, just this awesome, awesome experience.
Can I ask how you did in the video, how you did the tearing? Because that part, it was so well done. Like, it really did look like you were tearing into your clothing.
Yeah, that was actually Matt and Emily together came up with the idea. We just pre-cut holes.
Yeah.
And I had my fingers stuck in them so that when I pulled it across, it looked like I was ripping. Because originally I was just going to tear it to shreds. And we did a couple shots of me trying, and I just could not. And I mean, my wheelchair arms are pretty strong, and I was giving my everything and could not get it to tear at all. Yeah. So yeah, eventually we had to just like start pre-cutting and hiding my fingers and ripping that
way. Turned out really good, I think.
yeah. Good. I'm happy it did. And I mean, a lot of it was Matt's talent with lighting too, of knowing how to make that look more realistic and to showcase it properly.
I just think if like even like if Emily wasn't involved or if Matt wasn't involved or if you weren't involved, like I just think it was made perfectly by the collaboration. Like I just couldn't imagine it even slightly different. I'm really grateful that I was able to watch it. Thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Thank you. I mean, that means so much to hear. And yeah, because we really felt that in the room. So I'm so happy to hear that it translated. Yeah.
That's always good when it does.
Yeah. And we also wanted to prioritize that piece too, making sure that everybody could be involved. So we just have descriptive narration and enhanced narration in that as well, both for blind and partially sighted audiences, but also deaf and hard of hearing audiences. So yeah, we wanted to make sure that all those elements are in there, even though it's a very short video.
There's just so much, your poem, there's so much in the poem. Was it hard to include the descriptive, of what's happening with, was it hard to fit it in with it?
There were some challenges in editing for sure. And I mean, that was not my area. I'm not somebody who knows very much about editing. But I think because we were able to communicate beforehand very well within the team of this is what the poem is going to be. This is where the breaks will need to be for where the action's happening. That for the most part, it worked pretty well. There were a few times where we kind of had to slow down the action or stretch out a scene a little bit in order to fit in the narration in the background. And also having varying voices. For example, I'm reading the poem, Matt, they have a very much deeper voice than I do, just so people can very quickly recognize that feeling of shift between, okay, this is the action being described and this is the actual poem itself.
That's something I really enjoyed about your work and like a lot of the stuff we have each other on Facebook and seeing a lot of the work you do, and is that, you know, I often find like inclusion, especially inclusion for people with disability, is an afterthought, like an add-on to an already existing art piece. And what you're talking about is like creating art with inclusion in mind, which is something I think is so different and like amazing, and it doesn't, you know, it actually adds to the art rather than feeling like it's something someone just stamped on because they're like, oh right, we have to do this thing to be accessible. And I just wonder, like, in your experience, especially, you know, working with, you know, sort of these like any sort of like institutional art either organization or production, I find there's often such a resistance to any change of the art form. I'm doing like bunny quotes for people who can't see that, but you know, people are very stuck in the ways of like, this is how we've done it, and this is classically how it's done, how it should be done. And like, do you have faced any sort of, you know, challenges being like, you can't just, you know, add subtitles and call it good. Like you actually have to change the way the art form is done.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely been an ongoing issue that I've faced over the years. I've been doing work for accessibility consulting for about 10 years now, specifically in the arts. I don't consider myself an accessibility consultant in general, but I do speak to it a lot in the arts because that's where I live and that's my area of expertise. And 10 years ago, if anybody ever approached me with a question, which was very rare in and of itself, I was always having to approach them and fight for what I felt needed to happen. But if somebody approached me, It was very much, okay, we want you to do this element that fits in this box and with these parameters, and really not looking outside of that at all. And often things that, one, were not very possible, but two, also probably wouldn't have been very helpful to the community they thought they were going to be helping. So there was a lot of resistance at first to really listening to what our needs were as a disability community and having us be leaders in communicating that and involved at every step of the way in the decision-making process. It is getting a little better in that. I still feel for the most part, it's they bring in the token. Well, I mean, I'll use a term that I use, a token crip, that they want your advice and often don't want to pay you and just want to, yeah, listen to what you have to say, have it in a report to be able to say that they did it and move on. But in recent years, and especially I found with the forced shutdown of COVID, I've had so many more people reach out to me that are at least starting to think about this and starting to ask the questions. And it's still not perfect. There's still a very long way to go. There's still only certain communities within the disability community that they'll listen to, and also only certain people within the disability community that they'll listen to. And they still often will bring us in partway through and try to, well, you'll make it work, you'll figure it out. And well, yeah, but all the shows are already programmed, so we can't really choose what's going to work for us. And like trying to fit into the box. But people are becoming more aware of that and working more in a better direction, more willing to listen to us as a group and listen to our needs. But there's always going to be challenges and always going to be room for improvement in that.
So I'm just being mindful of time because we could talk forever. Yeah. So I think right now is where we'll end today's podcast. So I thank our listeners for listening to this conversation. I thank April for being our guest today and participating and sharing her story with us. We're hoping to do a second recording with April on another date to have part two of this conversation, where we're going to get into some more specific issues around disability.
Can I interrupt with one quick thing that I did very poorly and I want to apologize to your audience for? Sure. I never gave a visual description of myself at the beginning, so blind and partially sighted audiences who are trying to watch this will have no idea what I look like. So I'm just going to do that very quickly. I am a light-skinned white woman with shoulder-length brown hair. I have light tortoise-shell glasses, and I am wearing a gray sweater with a white background behind me. Thank you.
Thanks, April. I've never done it before, but I would love for us to try.
I feel like we should start doing that at the beginning of
I agree.
Yeah, I've never thought of that. I am a light-skinned white woman with shoulder-length brown hair. No glasses, red, maroon backdrop.
Mm-hmm. And I am a light-skinned white woman with shoulder-length straight brown hair. I'm wearing a gray sweater, and I am in a very cluttered space with an orange backdrop. Did we lose Truly's audio?
I can do Truly's description.
I can do it. I'm just dinging and I'm waiting for my roommates to stop messaging me. There we go. I am a light-skinned white woman with shoulder-length blondish pinkish hair with bangs. And I am wearing a white turtleneck and I am in my very brightly lit brown bedroom.
Thanks, April, for introducing us to that concept. Yeah. We've never done that before.
At the beginning of all our episodes.
So, yeah.
I actually did that once, not thinking when I was in a group meeting and not realizing that it was actually for a Drifting Ember project, Matt sitting next to me in the room. I guess his eyes, their eyes got really big on the screen. And like everybody commented afterwards that I gave them a heart attack when I started giving a description and realized that they'd have to do it after me. And so it's like, I don't do it to force anybody else to do it. It's just something that's really important to me that I feel I need to, yeah, make sure that everybody who hears me knows what I look like. And yeah.
I didn't feel forced. I was really grateful to learn that. I had never even thought about it before. So, yeah.
Maybe you can add that to your stand-up.
Start my stand-up. Yeah, actually. That's, yeah, maybe I should.
That might be interesting. Might be cool.
True. People will probably be wondering if I was joking. Like, they'd be like, are we supposed to laugh at this? Like, no.
I would love to see a comic rendition of your current surroundings and self-description. I think that would be amazing.
You can have so much fun with it. Go so many directions.
So thanks, April.
The 37th Festival International de Musique Actuelle de Victoriaville, a must for safe live arts, May 17th to 23rd, 2021. Concerts, sound art installations in public spaces, experimental short films, and visual arts. For a safe event of living arts, let's meet in Victo May 17th to 23rd. Details and tickets for the 37th FIMAV at www.fimav.qc.ca. That's www.fimav.qc.ca.
In Quebec, vaccination against COVID-19 is underway, but not everybody is protected yet. Even if you've been vaccinated, you still need to respect basic health measures, like wearing a mask, maintaining social distancing, and washing your hands regularly. You must also get tested if you have symptoms and follow self-isolation guidelines. Find out about the measures in place at quebec.ca/coronavirus. Follow all the health guidelines, all the time, no exceptions. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
There is this thing. Do you realize
what is?
There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news brought to you live.
Welcome back to The Avalanche on CKUT 90.3 FM. You are just listening to episode 8 of the Disabilities Art Podcast, and that completes this episode of The Avalanche, a special edition of Off the Hour, airing every Wednesday from 5 to 6. To stay up to date with Avalanche news, check out our Twitter, @AvalancheCKUT. Thank yous are due to all those who make educational and inspirational radio here at CKUT possible. If you would like more information on anything you heard tonight, or would like to participate or support news produced by and for the Montreal community, please contact The Avalanche at avalancheckut.ca or CKUT's Community News Department at 514-448-4041, extension 6788, or email news at ckut.ca. Stay tuned for Jose. That's up next.
Not yet, but I will soon.
And which one are you getting?
I'm getting the dance vaccine.
The dance vaccine? Great idea.
Yeah, rehearsing with the girls is what I miss the most.
Well, it's going to be the soccer vaccine for me. I can't wait to see the gang again.
Each vaccination brings us closer to these moments. Follow the vaccination sequence planned for your area and book an appointment at quebec.ca/COVID vaccine. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
Hey, you. Come over here and listen.
Oh, God, I'm so fucking wet. Yeah. Yeah. Like that. Like that. Oh, God.
You can't have me.
I would love your cock to be inside me. Oh, fuck. Oh, God. I'm really gonna come. I'm really gonna come. Oh, God. I'm so fucking wet. Can you see how wet I am? Can you see how wet I am? Oh, fuck. Yeah. Oh, fuck.
It's time for Audio Smith.